Muddy Knees Media.
Hello and welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Coming up, the Queen of Hearts won't budge despite takeover rumours. Dave King abdicates Rangers and now Douglas has parked up. We just want to go back to 1998 when Scotland were in the World Cup. Good thing is, we can. I'm Andrew Slavin. You may remember me from such films as gardening on BT Sport in a Queen of the South shirt and trying to forget that happened. And joining me, the master of Football Manager and the man who has recently achieved the sextuple. Quite a sexy thing to do, JJ. Congratulations.
That's good. What is this gardening thing you're on about?
So BT Sport are doing a programme called BT Sport Extra from Home. And basically they asked for some fan engagement to be in on that. And I was doing some gardening. So I got Emily, my girlfriend, to film me gardening, ripping up trees, which is probably kind of a bad thing. But they were invading my garden, so I had to commit tree murder.
Invading?
To create some space. Yeah.
How does a tree invade?
Well, they were already there, so I guess I invaded their territory.
Exactly.
But I won.
This is like the Americans all over again.
I sent that into BT and they used it quite a lot. But anyway, missing the football. Always good to get Queens on the telly.
I haven't watched any BT since the world's been cancelled. So
I've missed out. What's been going on in your isolation?
I had a holiday last week and I used it to play lots of Football Manager and play football in the park on my own. I've been doing this for a long time, right? Kicking a football about on my own.
You've been self-isolating for about 20 years, have you not?
That's correct. But I've noticed that lots of other guys have got the idea, and it does look quite silly kicking football about on your own, but I'm glad I was the first of anyone over the age of 30 to be doing it. I don't know. I've asked people before if it's normal to kick a football about on your own in the park, and everyone's been like, no, but I like doing it, so I don't know why I can't, you see?
Just quickly on Football Manager, is it not... Do you think... Are you bored now that you've got the sextuple?
Oh, I was just playing it because it's just a good way to sort of pass time while I'm sitting looking out at the...
It's that easy, is it?
Oh, yeah. When you get to the point I'm at in Football Manager 19, it's very easy, yeah. But a lot of people have been asking me questions about FM20, so I should probably play that a bit more so I know what to say to them. But yes, that's... Yeah, it'd be nice if football was back now. I would like to watch some.
Right, well, later on the show, JJ, you're going to be giving us your team of the season. We'll have a Celtic or a Rangers player this week, maybe?
This is the worst team of the season you will ever find anywhere. It started badly and it's got worse.
Yeah, it's going to get better. We're picking fullbacks this week. And we'll also be reliving Scotland's last appearance at a major tournament. The men's team, that is.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
So, JJ, the headlines this week. We've heard from the head honcho, the big man, the head chieftain, Alexander Seferin, the UEFA boss, suggesting that the season could be lost. What do you think? Where is it? Where's it gone?
As I tried to explain to you last week, Andrew, I don't know.
That's why it's lost. It's gone.
Exactly. You don't know. Well, where did he put it last? You put it last when lots of things were up for grabs. No one really knew what was going to go on. We still don't know anything. There's a lot of chat I've seen that some leagues... a lot of leagues will lose a lot of money by not playing, that's clear. But they will lose far more by not playing games than they would if they played them behind closed doors. So there's really kind of early tentative plans that maybe some leagues could go into some sort of holiday camp mode where they're all kept in a quarantine environment just to see out the rest of the season.
So you're basically saying that it's better to play the games for kind of sponsorship reasons and broadcasting rights reasons.
Well, do you not pay to watch a game every day just now? I would.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course I would.
That would be great.
So the league has been suspended until, or will be suspended until the April 30th at the moment. We know that UEFA are meeting with all 55 associations on Wednesday, which might spread a bit more light as to what's going to happen.
Do you think there'll be a bit more clarity on whether the leagues will be declaring winners of seasons? Will the season end, do you think, or do you think the season can restart? Because I think that Alexander Seferin said there was plan A, B and C, and if they can't be fulfilled, that's why the game is lost.
Well, Andrew, I still don't know. The whole thing is, I mean, we're going to, as long as we keep being able to do this podcast, we're not going to know anything about it till anything has been declared. I mean, you look at Italy, there's rumours, noises maybe, that they were looking at calling it in Serie A because, I mean, they're in such a dire strait that, I mean, they've just got a horrible, horrible situation going on there. So I'm sure they don't care about football that much. But then they could call that, and there's lots of money that needs to be distributed to people so they can pay people and staff. You've got a lot of clubs in, and then we spoke to like Steny last week, but I mean, today Bolton in England, they're in League One, I think.
Yeah.
Bolton have said that key management are taking pay cuts. They've furloughed staff. The father of the CEO died, which is not good. Mm-hmm. So that's one part of it. And Newcastle are furloughing staff, and all these bits are going on. Aberdeen, I think it's today, was it? Dave Cormack has come out and asked for clarity from football authorities. And this is the problem, exactly what we're talking about with Steny last week, is that teams, management, everyone who's playing football really needs leadership from above to let them know what's happening, because they can't make decisions till they know what's being done above them. But the organisations they're relying on leadership from need answers from people above them, and the whole situation is obviously very complicated. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say. We don't know what's going to happen, do we?
We don't know what's going to happen. We know that the SPFL have done a little thing where they've advanced some payments which were meant to be paid in April out to some clubs, where the top three in the Scottish Premiership got just under 400,000. But I think when you go further down to the likes of League Two, it was just under 2,000, which is nothing. And there's this thing that's been going around where, and I don't know how much you know about this, JJ, with the government's intervention, with furloughing staff to the sums of 80% of their wages, and this can be adopted and claimed for by a lot of clubs. And I think this is where we can kind of move on to Hearts and say this is why they're looking at, you know, 50% wage cuts. Do you know much about how these clubs can claim, or how these clubs might be able to utilise this?
No. I mean, I barely understand half the government.
Are you a financial man, JJ?
No, and I listen and I read to all the bits and pieces, but I am not your man for economic advice, nor the government's slightly confusing instructions that they've given for everyone. I know that the thing with Hearts now is that, well, Anne Budge wrote to the players saying their wages could be suspended from March 31st, so when this podcast is out, if they don't accept the 50% wage cut. But I mean, they're not. I know Chris Boyd, I think, was making fun of Hearts for offering to do this. This is going to be worldwide. Clubs have got to do things like this. Barcelona have got to take a 70%, I think it is, pay cut.
And yeah, that's right.
I think, I don't know if this is confirmed, but I think some of the top players like Messi, the ones you'd expect, have said that they can take that cut so that the other staff, like key staff who aren't players, can be paid their full wages. You know, the ones who tend to earn a lot less. They're not getting paid 800 grand a week to man the club shop. Be a good job if you could. But yeah, this is a Scottish teams, like Dave Cormack, he's quite vocal. He seems to like talking to the press, and he's been asking for clarity on leadership. A lot of the clubs are really worried about their money. I mean, Rangers have just gone through a change in Dave King's obviously stepped down. You've got Douglas Park. Dave King said that Rangers needed £10 million injected just to keep cash flow going with the club. And that, I don't know what their situation is like now, especially if there's no income either, because they have massive expenses.
Well, one man with his finger on the pulse of everything is former chief SFA comms man and former head of football news writer at the Herald, Daryl Broadfoot, who joins us now. Daryl, how are things with you at the moment?
wonderful. I have my finger on the pulse of every Joe Wicks fitness video going to keep my mind occupied in these long, endless days.
Superb. Let's get stuff into the stuff that really matters. And the first question we'll ask is, when will the season restart?
More caveats than a contract. When will the season start? But bluntly, I can't see the season starting any time before late July, early August. That's not a considered official view, but that's from the early days, understanding how this virus works, how it's going to impact on us, when it's likely to peak, when that bell curve will start heading down the way. So I genuinely, hand on heart, can't see that happening anytime June. July, I think, will be the earliest that players will be going back doing proper group-related activity, and then you'll have to start factoring in the end of the season from that moment on.
I mean, we've already heard Anne Budge, the chairman of Hearts, come out and kind of admit that there's going to be at least 6 months of kind of abnormal football operations. Is that, do you kind of agree with that?
Abnormal. I don't think we'll see any kind of normality for a year, 2 years across the board, because by the time we get out of this lockdown, by the time we try to rebuild lives, businesses, economies, there'll be a new normality that will take a while to get used to. So normality, I think, is something that will change our perceptions of normality and reality. 4 weeks ago are already demonstrably different to what they are now, and will certainly be different to what it's like 5-6 months from now. From a club's perspective, how quickly can you get back to fans coming to watch? How quickly can you get to income generation? And that's why I generally think August, September is the earliest you can do that. But even by that point, normality, I think, will be a forlorn hope.
But what about this season? And this season, you know, coming to an end, you know, a full programme of fixtures being completed and champions and relegations being confirmed. Could there be a scenario where we don't see that at all and that has to be brought up earlier? Is that something that the SPFL have to consider maybe in the coming weeks?
There's nothing from day one the SPFL have had to consider what happens to the league, because you've got money riding on it, you've got bonus payments, you've got celebration, you've got titles to be won, you've got cups to be determined. And what you've seen recently, the FA have obviously called lower league football and effectively null and voided the competitions. I think the SPFL's preference, as they've said all along, would be to complete the season. But there comes a point when the wish or the preference to complete the season is at odds with the desperate need for short-term cash flow from the clubs. That's why Scottish FA's front-loaded £1.5 million worth of advance payments. That's why SPFL remitted their April payments and prorated those who are already certain of top six, Motherwell, for example, a couple of days ago. So in an ideal world, you would complete the season when it's safe and appropriate to do so, sometime in the early summer.
We have now other scenarios. I'll talk about player contracts in a minute as well, but because obviously they're important too. But is there I know the SFA have this rule on dual ownership, and we've heard recently that there has been a kind of desire for a Hearts takeover from the chairman of Barnsley, I think Paul Conway.
And you think that's realistic, the Hearts takeover, given the amount of money that the Foundation of Hearts have put in?
Well, I think it's funny anyway, because Paul Conway sacked Daniel Stendel as Barnsley just this season anyway. What I'm getting at is that idea of is there an element where we need to attract more investment? So something like trying to bat away potential investors who have ownership of other football clubs in Scottish football. Is that something that the SFA might consider allowing to happen from now to try and help clubs find more funding?
You have to welcome the doves and stave off the vultures, in my experience, when it comes to inward investment. Scottish FA will be more than open. I think the board themselves have loosely discussed how to provide that comfort. So if you think back to Mike Ashley, for example, when he was looking to invest in Rangers, a tariff of, say, 10% was set up so that you wouldn't fall foul of dual ownership regulations. The reality, of course, when you look at it globally and you look at, for example, the Citigroup, there's an example of an ownership model that sets up franchises. So, of course, Scottish FA and Scottish football generally would be foolish to turn its nose up at any investment in the game, but it has to be serious investment. And it has to be investment for the best interest, not just of Scottish football, but for the respective clubs. And I think there's board provision for that investment, especially for people who have got stakes in other clubs, so long as that it doesn't impact on dual interest on either side. Because bear in mind, ironically enough, the rules in the Championship in England are fairly stringent when it comes to that as well. So it'd be setting a sufficient bar that doesn't jeopardise the future prosperity of the club, but allows that financial investment.
And can you explain to us that a thing that's came out in the past week, this clause 12? I've heard about it, and it seems to be in almost all SPFL player contracts, where if the league has been suspended, clubs have the right to suspend paying wages. Is that the way it works?
Yeah, and I think there's an element of it enshrined in employment law. But effectively, if you're mode of business ceases to function for a defined period, then I think the SPFL rules permit, and I've got it up here, in the event of the Scottish FA deciding that the game should be suspended entirely or any district or districts provided for in the articles, the agreement shall be correspondingly suspended unless the club is exempted from such suspension. So it's typically legalese, but in short, if the game is suspended, then the club have the provision to similarly suspend, not terminate, but suspend those contracts.
Can you see there being any chance of, if it were possible, logistically and especially regarding safety, if games are to be played behind closed doors in some sort, you know, they keep the players in some sort of imaginary dome where they don't interfere with the public ever. But is that something that financially, because they would still lose money from gates but might make money back from TV possibly or some sort of internet streaming, is that a possible thing?
Let me put it to you this way. If you don't have the capacity to bring fans in because of health and safety, if you are the player's reps or if you were looking at it from a player first perspective, you would ask the question, if it's not safe for fans, why is it safe for players? Because we'll have to be around hotels or dressing rooms or training grounds and be in each other's company. So if it's not safe enough for the public, what makes it safe enough for players? I get the behind closed doors issue, and it's obviously something we'd seen sporadically before lockdown and the pandemic reaching Europe in the way that it did. But I think we have to be careful in just assuming that the health and safety of players is a kind of pliable concern. What applies for fans, what applies to clubs and individual staff members should apply to players. So while it may well be a potential down the line, I don't think we can just glibly say, let's just play behind closed doors, because players' welfare is equally important.
Daryl Broadfoot, former SFA head of comms. So let's look at possible solutions then.
I like this. This is more on my street.
So we've had a question in on Twitter from Callum Clark, who asks, is league restructuring the way to go? Tell the TV companies 4 old firms a year isn't a must and copy the Dutch model, 18 team top flight and 22 lower league is the way to go, I think. So I think he's basically saying, you know, four games between Celtic and Rangers is enough, 18 team top flight and 22 for whatever the other division or however.
Well, I interpreted it as more, I mean, the question says, tell the TV companies to stop being obsessed with the old firm and create a more equal competitive product that is better and more easily sold. I mean, there's a huge following for teams like Hearts, Hibs. Aberdeen have historically done well in Europe, so they have a good following. The Dundee clubs, you got a good derby there. There's a lot of stuff going on. You could easily, I think, make it an 18-team league. I've watched that for ages, 16 teams even, just to make it more competitive. But the problem is money. It ruins mm-hmm. and controls everything. So mm-hmm. even like so in Scotland, the majority, but it's like a good chunk of revenue income for football clubs in Scotland comes from gates, from tickets sold. So if the most of their money comes from tickets sold, they need a reason to go. And people are more likely to go and see Rangers coming to town than Hamilton. So a lot of clubs, like, say, I mean, Livy, for example, can get maybe 1,000 through the door, 1,200. I'm not sure what their average gate is. I should really know that for certain, but it's not a huge amount. When Celtic and Rangers are let turn up, they fill the entire stadium with fans. So that straight away can be £10,000 a ticket sold at £30 a go. What's that, 300 grand? I'm not very good at maths, but I'm hoping that's about right. So that is a huge amount of income incoming. But what we've seen in recent seasons, which I quite like, is that certain clubs have realised that by doing this and focusing on Rangers and Celtic and giving them heaps of seats in the away section, it's a detriment to your own club, because you lose out on money for a start, but it sort of devalues your club in a bit, in a way. What I'm trying to say is that if you treat them as though they're special, then they naturally become special. And so you have kids coming through who will only want to support one of the two from Glasgow rather than their local team or anyone else. It's not... And you look at, like, England, if Man United just won every single time, all the time, forever, and then that was it. It would just be like the French League and no one would care. But lots of different clubs have won it over time. People look at the Scottish League, in England especially, as a bit of a joke because it's always Celtic at the moment. And before that, it was always only Celtic or Rangers. And that is a problem. Yes, you can sell it because it's got this moronic, historical, vaguely tied in with religion thing that... I know people who don't support one of the two don't care about. I don't care. I don't care about the Old Firm. But it sells tickets. It sells the league around the world. If you don't have that, the Scottish League is no more interesting to various other countries than, I don't know. Well, the example in the question, the Dutch one. Do you watch Dutch football? Because I don't.
No, I don't.
I go and see Ajax play because they're decent.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. You pick it on Ajax, Feyenoord or PSV. I think... For this instance, I think restructuring does make sense. Yeah. I'm kind of all for the idea of no relegation, all promotion. So you bring two teams up from the Championship and vice versa as you go down the leagues, and you have, you know, a 14 team top flight.
Yeah, I want Cali in it, Dundee United.
Because I'm thinking with my TV hat on, I'm even thinking at the end of the season, the relegation fight's far more interesting because you've got two going down.
Yes.
So you've got the more interest at the bottom end of the table as much as there might be at the top end if Celtic aren't 20 points clear by February. But there you go. I mean, there's still interest in the division and you can still split the league. So you could still have your four or five, six Celtic Rangers games because you're going to get them in the cups anyway. So
not always, but the point is right now, I mean, the teams in the top six who played Rangers and Celtic get an extra two games against them right after the split. And it's two before that? Three before it? I can't...
Potentially three.
And like my example with Livy, or just whoever, any club, right, with a small gate, suddenly they sell that many more tickets because there's more interest. That can... If it's twice, it can be £500,000, maybe more, that comes through to your club as revenue that you could use for something else. Interesting that different clubs have stopped doing that. And not giving them so much of the away support, but it will be a long term thing that you're trying to encourage. That you're trying to build this support group that will come through in years to come. So you have, I mean, I've seen. It feels to me like Scottish football is more, I don't know, is more widely followed amongst children than when I was growing up. From what I see from my friends and their kids and people going to school and stuff like that.
And on social media, definitely. I think
social media is a huge reason for that. And there's something that it's sort of. I don't know, it's really fun to support a Scottish team. And people are very protective over the Premiership as well. But anyway, yeah, it's the money will ruin it all. I would like it to be a more competitive product so it's more fun to watch. And I think it's great having teams like say, Cali and Dundee United, Partick. It'd just be cool to have those teams back in so they're always there and it's more interesting as a whole rather than finding out which team finishes behind Celtic or Rangers.
JJ, all good. Good ideas. Maybe we can actually start a lobby for it on social. I mean, yeah, we're full of them, aren't we? Yes, but let's see what happens in the future. Speaking of, still to come on the show. We're going back in time to the 1998 World Cup. But first, we've got this.
I'm Jose Mourinho. I know a thing or two about being special. Finding pastel de natas in a London cafe? Special. Winning the daily jackpot on Paddy Power games? Not special.
Understood, Jose. Yes, someone wins an average £40,000 jackpot every single day. So if you win, don't think you're special. Daily jackpots by Paddy Power Games. Jackpots must be awarded by 11 p.m. and vary from day to day. Jackpot is shared with other operators. Available on selected games. T's and C's at paddypower.com. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Scottish Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Team of the Season.
Yes, it's Team of the Season time with a fancy new jingle. We've tasked JJ with coming up with a first 11 that can only include one player per Premiership side, therefore making it not the Team of the Season. But still,
sort
a fun
of is,
challenge.
But not really. Yeah. It sort of turned into me picking the best one of...
It's a shocking side, JJ, I have to admit. Like, I know you've got coaching badges, but f*** me.
I've got the very limited, like, lowest ones. I don't think the coaching has anything to do with my amazing picks. But so far, to summarise, Xander Clark in goal, Andy Considine and Declan Gallagher at centre-backs, and that's where we're at.
And you have picked a manager.
Oh, yes.
St Mirren's Jim Goodwin, because Jim Goodwin is a very okay manager.
Yeah.
Manager of the Season!
So, JJ, we're picking fullbacks this week. Who have you got?
My fullbacks this week are... We'll go with the boring one first. Because I had to pick a Kilmarnock player. Stephen O'Donnell is the right
back.
That's
a solid choice.
Because he's not been great for Scotland, you see. And then I think people have forgotten that he's actually a really decent right back. But at Scottish Premiership level. And... he's been very decent. And we spoke about the Y Scout, the way they index their players according to various statistics. So the way you can go to Y Scout and they have all their analysis and their data and all these bits and pieces. And yeah, Stephen O'Donnell comes out just below James Tavernier. And weirdly, Sean Clare, who's not really a right back.
Yeah. So Stephen O'Donnell, in terms of your stats, comes down as the second best right back in the division anyway.
Well, according to Y Scout, he's the third best, but in terms of, I mean, he's one of the best right backs in the country anyway, I'd say. One of the.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the natural choice would be Tavernier, obviously, at Rangers, I think would be the number one. Jeremy Frimpong at Celtic has been really good fun to watch. I've enjoyed him. And other than that, there's not a huge amount of choice, I would have said, throughout the league. It's not. There's no real stands out. Oh, that's my computer. Exactly, even the keyboard degrees. There's none. So we're going to put O'Donnell in there. There's no huge statistical thing that makes him stand out particularly. He commits a lot of fouls is one thing he does, but that's probably...
Professional fouls.
Well, that we get sent off for. But yes, I suppose technically every foul he commits is a professional foul because he's a professional player. But he also makes a lot of key passes per 90. He likes to dribble with the ball. You can tell he's just a good... player. Like, he's the kind of player I think would be all right in midfield as well if he had to do it. He reminds me a bit of like Andy Dow back in the day for Aberdeen, who was a left back. But yeah, that's why Stephen O'Donnell is one of my fullbacks of the season.
Nice. So left back then?
It's got to be the one and only Aaron Hickey, who can play left back or right back. So multi-talented. But yeah, I'm sure you'll agree that he's been very decent this season.
The reason I like him is he's quite versatile. He plays right back as well. In terms of fullback, he is, for a 17-year-old to be versatile and play right back as well as left back, I think he's even played centre-half because of the defensive injuries Hearts have had this season.
Yeah, he's played midfield as well. And I think he came through as a defensive midfielder in his even younger days. He was listed as a defensive midfielder in Football Manager 19, incidentally. But... As a left back, for any player to be playing top division football at a young age, so I've done this, I've talked this a few times in the podcast, but having gone through lots and lots of examples in history and using like the great Real Madrid team that won the Champions League 3 years in a row, all the players that tend to reach a high level are all playing first team football, starting games by the time they are 18. If they don't make it, if they're not playing by the time they're 18, they don't tend to reach such a high level. It's sort of a weird statistic. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. But if you think players like Modric, Ramos, Benzema, they're all starting at a young age because they're good enough. Jadon Sancho was good enough. That's why he's playing. Benzema was good enough. That's why he was playing at that age. Hickey is good enough to play in the Premiership as one of the better fullbacks in the country. And he's 17. So I think a lot of football is the mentality. He's obviously, he'll grow because he's still young. So he'll grow into his body more and become physically stronger and maybe faster, things like that. But he can already play with his head, and that is the most important part of being any footballer, but especially as a defender. And the good thing is also that there's a dearth of talented left backs in Scotland. So
I was going to say, you beat me to it.
It's low hanging fruit, that joke, though, isn't it? But yeah, there you go. Aaron Hickey. So that is our left back of the season.
Wow. Do you know what? I can see this as a pretty dire football team.
Xander Clark. You know it's bad when it starts there. A band is only as good as their drummer.
I would say at the moment, I say dire, I think that's, I'm being a bit harsh here. I would say that goalkeeper and back four, I think, could be a solid mid-table back four.
That back four could finish third.
Well, there you go. And with that, we can move on to the biggest moment of the podcast. We're moving on to Retro Fitbar. Do you really want it? Yeah. Do you really want
it? Yeah. Do you really want it? Yeah. Jack, I want you to draw me like one of your French girls. Is that a hair gel?
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Do you believe in love after love? Just don't come home to
sin. Just don't come home to sin. So last week we introduced our new feature, Retro Fitbar.
And we're going to spend the next 3 weeks focusing on the 1998 World Cup, because, spoiler alert, that's all Scotland got to play. Meh. But that doesn't mean we can't remember the good times. Like when Scotland opened the whole damn tournament by facing Brazil. Before we get into the match details, though, here's a reminder of what happened.
Quite make it. Cesar Sampaio did, an unlikely scorer, and Brazil lead. Collins against Taffarel. Fight for Scotland. And he finds the corner. Taffarel went the right way, but couldn't reach it. It's a lovely ball to Cafu from Dunga. Scotland in trouble. It's gone in off Tommy Boyd. It's an own goal. Cafu claims it. Scotland so unlucky.
Scotland eventually losing this match thanks to an own goal by Tommy Boyd, having gone behind after 4 minutes, before equalising through John Collins. So JJ, you and I have both watched the match back. Have you watched the match back, JJ?
I haven't watched the match yet.
The full 90 minutes?
I've watched the full 90 minutes, yeah.
How did you feel when the teams walked out? What was your what do you remember from back then?
I was very young. I remembered where I watched it. I talked about this last week. I watched it at my friend's house in Aberdeenshire. Good times all around. I remember it being.
Do you remember what I remember though? Like, I remember getting out of school early. My primary school
were
let
you
me
at school?
Out.
I wasn't at school for that.
Yeah, I'm almost certain I was still at school. Well, anyway, I remember just me and two of my good friends getting face painted from my mum, full saltire. You know, proper William Wallace style. Getting ready for this game. I don't remember us being so excited.
But one thing I noticed from watching this game, Andrew, which may shock you, is that I think Brazil might have been better at football than Scotland at the time.
Yeah, just a bit. Just a little bit. I mean, I think if you think about the excitement going into that game, there's always that feeling of maybe just, but when you saw us go down after 4 minutes from, I think it was Cesar Sampaio, defender, absolute class as well. but a bit of a defensive mistake, really, from a corner. I kind of felt like we were unlucky. But at the same time,
analysis of the defending of the front.
The first 15 minutes was absolutely dreadful from Scotland. We couldn't keep the ball, and Brazil just looked so classy.
I thought, I sort of disagree with all of that. I think Scotland are nervous to start with, but I think they gave the ball away needlessly. They were playing a lot of channel balls, which you still see today. I don't see that much different in the Scotland then than I do in sort of modern Scotland. Roughly the same sort of thing. You've got one striker chasing everything, everyone else behind the ball, the wide forwards chasing stuff, and they're finally forward. But it's mostly a team of defenders and a striker. It was mostly how it was.
I was going to explain how Craig Bowen had set up, because it was kind of a kind of surprise attacking intent that Scotland
attacking.
Went out with, didn't they?
It was
a 4-3-3.
Yeah.
They had Kevin Gallagher, Drury up front, wasn't it, as well? And Darren Jackson.
Yep. And the plan was...
Like three centre-forwards against Brazil. I mean, how ballsy is that?
They weren't centre-forwards, though. They were wide forwards. They were basically wingers. And you had Burley on the right midfield as well to try and double up, because they knew that Roberto Carlos would go forward, and they were hoping that they'd hit the ball quickly forward down that channel and exploit it. And you saw... the first half, everything went down the left. Not really sure why that was, because they wanted to try and take apart the right. But the plan could have been to go up the left so that they'd have a player free on the right to switch the play. That didn't really happen anyway. But it was quite... I don't know. I think Scotland did all right. It's just weird talking about them from that far back. One of the things I did find really funny was that I agree that Brazil looked at it a cut above, because they were. They're one of the best... I mean, they were a great team. It's funny seeing Ronaldo versus Jim Leighton. That was a good laugh as well to see that again.
He had quite a good game. Jim Leighton actually did. Like, people, I forget, he was 40 years old.
Exactly. And he played longer after that as well. There's a good save off Roberto Carlos, takes a shot from outside the box, bends it across the goal, and Leighton pushes it away. Remember that? He was really unlucky with the pushing the ball off of Tom Boyd for the goal as well. It was a real shame. One of the things I thought was funny, and you get, I think it's 24 minutes 15, if you managed to find a copy of this game to watch. At 24 minutes 15, Darren Jackson doesn't really touch Dunga an awful lot, but Dunga goes down howling, like, rah! And you can hear quite audibly, and I'll be bleeped while I say this, "F-ing hell!" And you can hear him on the off mic quite clearly. And then he gets up and he just looks at him, and Roberto Carlos comes across, touches him on the back, because, like, I know, he's at it. And then Jackson walks, and a lot of them are at it in this game as well. Like, there were people going flying, like Sampaio. I think Jury chases him down. Sampaio goes to clear the ball and ends up kicking Jury with his leg, and then goes down holding his leg, howling again. And Jury looks at him, like, just shaking his head, like, come on, ref, it's not a foul to them. It's clearly, like, he's gone in a bit hard and fast, but that's just how it is. Same thing with Scotland now. They're still trying to batter people rather than outplay them. The other thing with him, with Jackson, is after he's stood up and walked away from him, he looks up at him and sort of shouts, "Hey, you're a fanny." I'm sure that's what he says. If anyone can watch it and work out what he's saying, I tried to listen to it about 10 times and I couldn't quite work out the words, but it was perfect. He was just beside one of the on-pitch mics, so you can just get him. It's great. It's great.
One of the cringiest things I thought I didn't expect to see, although it makes total sense now, was when the teams were lined up and the camera pans across the whole Scotland team and it gets to John Collins and he gives the most cringiest, like, wink, like, "Yeah, I'm on camera, lads. Let's do this. Let's screw the Brazilians." Oh, man. It was so bad. At least he scored, though. At least he scored.
I forgot it was coming, but I knew it was coming when I watched it. It was weird. As soon as it goes across him.
I don't know if he always had that confidence. I mean, he was playing at Monaco at the time.
Yes.
So he'd left Celtic, hadn't he?
This is what John Collins is like. Like, all the stories you hear about John Collins. He sounds like a very confident man. That's part of his abilities, that he believes he can do things that, I mean, he was a good player, but he wasn't Beckham.
No, he wasn't. I think this was a time that, because Brazil were quite unstoppable after winning the World Cup in 94. And I think there was this sort of... There might have been a nervousness going into this tournament for Brazil in a way, because...
Why were they nervous playing against Ronaldo, Rivaldo, Cafu and Roberto Carlos?
Well, Brazil were prolific when they had Ronaldo and Romario. And Romario wasn't in this team because he was injured. But I remember looking back and thinking, how many goals did they score in 97? I think they won everything that they could between 94 to 98. And I saw that Romario and Ronaldo had this partnership which was called the Roro attack, and they scored 37 goals in 1997, and I think Romario scored 19 of them. And it was one of these things where, like, well, if Romario's not there, how will Brazil get on? Turned out they did all right, but they didn't win the competition, so there you go.
It is interesting, though, how Scotland played in this game the same way that they would approach it. Like, there's really not that much difference in modern Scotland to the old. Like, I know we often look at it and go, oh, we were so much better back in 98 and that when we got a team to the tournament. It's really not that different. It was just, like, sit quite deep, focus on a couple of game tactics you can use, like, you know, target this player, try this, do that. But the mostly channel balls, not a particularly high press, nothing too special. The players are decent at keeping it, moving it around, but they're up against better players who are more comfortable keeping it. And in high-pressure situations, the better players are the ones who don't end up hitting it into a channel. They just pass it backwards and start again, and they're patient. But that's something that Scotland never really been particularly great at. I mean, I think the last good teams we would have had were in the 80s, where the ones in the 90s weren't particularly... Like, it's solid enough, but, I mean, the Colin Hendry is like a... considered a great defender, but he's the kind of guy, he's a great defender because he just throws himself at grenades. Like, I think he would be on the street and he would do that for himself in front of a bus to save a cat. It's the kind of thing
he was made for that game. He was blocking everything. He was literally throwing his life on the line to stop, you know, shots going in.
I don't think he was literally putting his life on the line.
Was the foul on Kevin Gallagher, I think it was it a penalty?
It was soft.
Do you think it was soft? Very soft.
Yeah, really soft. Yeah.
Very soft.
Good penalty, though.
Yeah, it was a good penalty. And what about the winner for Brazil? I mean, I think I remember particularly just walking away. I went to my garage and just cried. And then I cried more because the paint that my mum had put in my face went into my eyes. So that was quite sore. So it was I just got absolutely slammed.
I think my crushing lifelong realism meant that I just, oh, well, that's what was always going to happen, wasn't it? That was good fun, though. The colours are nice. I love the shirt's colours.
It's the first time I realised that this was going to be my future. This was the start of something disastrous, and it's still going on.
Well...
Well, after, you know, you mentioned it was a heroic defeat, which seems to be a quite a good thing. I think Scotland did. Yeah, I don't think we could have played any better. I don't think we were ever going to win that game, but we could still hold our heads high by only losing by a goal. So
yeah, it's the kind of game we'd only win 1-0. The same way we beat France with Fadi scoring from 4 miles out, it is the same thing.
And just before we move out of this, we did have a really good chance in the second half when it was 1-1, when the only time Scotland actually played nice football, albeit, yeah, it was a long ball up to Gordon Jury, who just kicked lumps out of all the defenders, knocked it into Kevin Gallagher, and he played a really nice move.
But he wasn't kicking them.
No, I know, but it's clever. It was really, really clever. But Kevin Gallagher, do you remember the bit I'm talking about? Working with John Collins, and they actually cut Brazil into pieces. And Kevin Gallagher then cut the ball back, but nobody was there. Nobody was there to just tap it in.
Oh, I can't remember that bit. I might have been looking at my phone at the time or something.
It was in the second half.
Scotland, the forwards were, like, they were good players in that team. It's just that as a team, collectively, Scotland have not been very strong ever.
Yeah. Summed up perfectly by, who was it, Baiano, centre-half, who back-heeled defensive clearance. That was Brazil. Next week, we are going to be talking about Scotland's game against Norway, which was a must win. Will things be brighter? I don't think so. Well, thanks to you all for listening and spending your lockdown with us again this week. Our final question of the day goes to Andrew Lang, who asks, can we build a statue for Naisy? Stephen Naismith, this is merely the latest gesture in a long line of career generous, socially minded action. Would you allow a statue, JJ?
I think everyone should get a statue. Well, Considine should get a statue, Naismith, Martin Boyle.
So on the fence, it's unbelievable, always. JJ, thanks for being. give everyone a statue. Everyone must be happy. Well, thank you for your...
Like statues are good.
Thanks, JJ.
At Arsenal, there's about 14 of the things. Everyone gets one. Actually. You play 100 games, you get a statue.
Well, thank you, JJ. We'll get you a statue soon, don't you worry. And thanks to the Little Kicks as well for the quarantunes. Very good. I'll let Abby, the producer, enjoy that one. Listeners, stay safe. Keep washing those hands. Look after your friends and family by staying away from them. And until then, we'll see you next Tuesday.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football Network at The Totally Show on Twitter. And make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Hello, listeners. I'm Caroline Barker, host of the Totally Football League Show. I'm joined each week by Sam Parkin. Say hello, Sam.
Hi, Caroline.
By Adrian Clark. Say hello, Adrian.
Hello.
And a Bolton Wanderers fan too. Not Adrian, but Joe Cridley. Looking forward to League Two.
Yes.
Each week we go headfirst into the EFL to bring you the latest from the pitches to the next crisis to whatever Ian Holloway has said now. From Leeds to Luton, Sunderland to Plymouth, Swindon to Stevenage and everything in between. If it's the EFL you want, we've got you covered. Haven't we, Ollie?
Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down.
Your guess is as good as ours. That's the Totally Football League Show, out every Wednesday.
In the most delightful way. It's brilliant. I just love it.
Muddy Knees Media.